gets it. This is one cool commander. Conway, Lizette, and I pass through the airlock onto the ship. Allow me to confirm. You are cadets affiliated with the Deimos Detachment, correct? First Lieutenant Lizette Agarwal, First Lieutenant Lee Conway, and First Lieutenant Cersei Bernhard.
Hi.
Yep. Yes, sir. Commander Kinnison, though at this point in time he was still just Major General Kinnison, was a solemn name. He invoked the image of cold forged steel in my mind. He was on a wild, wholly different level than the three officers standing behind him. The three of them looked at us with a mixture of disgust and curiosity, but Kinnison's gaze was unclouded as he looked straight at us. Whoops. One of the three snapped at us, telling us to do away with those ridiculous outfits if we considered ourselves soldiers of the UEF. Conway and I exchanged glances. We weren't really sure how we changed into our forms, so we weren't sure how to get out of them either. Roger, Dodger. Okay, off. In the blink of an eye, Lizette was completely naked. She still had her communication unit around her neck, as well as her bone conduction earpiece, of course. But otherwise, she wasn't wearing anything at all. How? The officer's mouth fell open. Conway became just as visibly flustered as I did. But thinking back on it, it did make sense. All three of us were completely naked after we were violated atop that gigantic enemy alien. So if those magic-like clothes were to disappear, then surely we'd return to how we were before transforming. That would mean my aroused crotch would be exposed, as would the stains of virginal blood trailing down Conway's legs. Huh, why aren't you taking it off? This is the army. We gotta do what the general says or we get in trouble, right? At times like these, I wish my mind could be as utterly devoid of tact as Lizette's. Major General Kinnison suddenly turned around to face the three men behind him. You seem to regard these three as dangerous. If you exit the room and close the door, it will guarantee your safety. This is an order. The three officers began complaining loudly. I repeat, this is an order. I'll assume all responsibility for this. At the Major General's words, they fell silent and moved to the adjacent room. First Lieutenant Lizette Agarwal, you may put on your attire from earlier. Okie dokie. And Shin. Firstly, I want you to tell me just how you came to possess this power. Tell me everything. Excuse me, may I have permission to speak, sir? You have my permission. Sir, if I may ask, why did you conclude someone as suspicious as us three aren't part of the enemy? It's simple. I watched you fight on the monitor earlier. Human technology can't harm the enemy. Their mobility far exceeds ours. No UEF fleet would be able to oppose them. As it stands, current human technology can't defeat those aliens. The only ones who seem to have the potential to defeat them are you three. In this situation, we have no recourse but to rely on you. Does that put your mind at ease? Lizette exhaled proudly out of her nose and pumped her fist with excitement. There it is! Let's go! Let's freaking go! The fate of the Earth rests on our shoulders! Lizette, watch your attitude. We're in the presence of a major general. I was pretty nervous, too. I've chided Lizette about her attitude plenty of times already in the past, but it always just goes in one ear and out the other. You're exactly right. At least I think you are. But it would probably require great sacrifices to get the top brass to share our point of view. I was shocked. How could someone be as amazing as he was? I had never before seen an adult that wasn't angered or irritated by Lizette's antics. Following that, Conway did most of the talking. She explained the course of events, starting from our debris removal mission near Mars. Conway's explanation was cogent and organized. I had very little to add. Whenever I opened my mouth, it was easily to chide Lizette whenever she cut in with needless commentary. Major General Kinnison's questions were always to the point. Despite it being a rather long conversation, it ended before we knew it. The only exchange of note was when we recounted how we descended to Mars' surface and searched the East Canal base. What are the chances of there being survivors in the East Canal base? He asked us that question. Conway's explanation made it very clear there was no chance of survivors, but he asked again, as if to make it absolutely clear. Given how he never wasted time with anything else, him asking this question seemed rather strange. Based on what we saw while we were there and the information we obtained from East Canal Base, I'd say chances of any survivors are close to zero. But she then seemed to realize something, because she quickly added, "But I am of the opinion that if you were to send a large amount of people to search the base, you might discover places we overlooked that are still concealing survivors in hiding. We have neither the manpower nor supplies for that. Organizing that kind of mission is impossible." His expression and voice were perfectly flat, but I saw his clenched fist tremble. It was a small, minute detail. Even if it were possible, it wouldn't be the correct course of action. What we must do now is prepare for the hostilities to come. We must return you to Earth. It felt more like he was reassuring himself than speaking to us. I later learned that his wife and daughter, who were herself about our age, happened to be visiting Mars that day. Even knowing the chances of their survival were slim, he must have wanted nothing more than to comb the planet's surface in search of them. During our journey back to Earth, Kinnison worked carelessly with us, forsaking sleep in favor of further understanding our abilities and planning how to use them. Due to his attention to detail, he even figured out that we could go in shifts to help push the transport ship to even faster speeds. That desperate measure allowed us to reach Earth in just a third of the time of normal that a usual voyage would take. The moment we arrived, he began intense negotiations with the top brass. The objective of the talks was the formation of our unit. Perhaps that was a way of distracting himself from the grief of losing his wife and child. And so, just before the decisive battle began, our special warfare trooper trial unit was founded under the premise that we would serve a central role in the war against CC. At the moment, we are stationed on Base 32, a small orbital base in Earth's orbit located far away from the front line. It should be starting any minute now. The holographic projection inside the HQ room displays how the CC Vanguard is beginning to push into the space sector where the UEF has set up their ambush. In sync, the main force and ambush units fire their salvos of ordnance. Brilliantly done. Conway's admiration is justified. The blasts extend in all directions, enveloping the CC in wave after wave of fiery explosions. None of the CC can escape the shower of shrapnel that washes over them like coming tide. At least it would be, if we were up against humans. Despite the amount of shots fired, space is huge. Although each individual piece of shrapnel from the explosion is highly lethal, the distances involved mean that there are huge gaps in between them. Spaceships being too slow to take advantage of this would still eventually take a hit, but the CC are so mobile that they actually swim into those wide gaps to dodge the incoming shrapnel, consistently evading harm altogether. I understand they brought in the new cluster warheads, but these new types of missiles are loaded with multiple autonomous warheads. Once released, the individual warheads trigger once they detect a nearby enemy. You'd have been able to evade that easily enough, wouldn't you? Yeah, easy as pie. It has to do with the projector's trajectory being somewhat limited, I believe. It's much more likely they choose to evade the initial shots themselves rather than risk entering the kill zone they create. But if you funnel them into an area and have the main force unleash concentrated laser fire into it, even those quick aliens won't be able to dodge that easily. That's our plan, is it not? I see. They made the fleet look like it was just bait, but the real decoy is actually the wave of ordnance, which restricts the CC's ability to maneuver. You're quite a smart one, First Lieutenant. That's exactly what the top brass has in mind. I can hear a bit of cheering mixed into the transmissions between HQ and the fleet. The operation is going according to plan. Several dozens of the alien flyers seem to be giving off infrared ray reactions, proof that the laser fire is hitting them. But this is as far as they'll get. The tides turn against humanity in the blink of an eye. The hits the lasers are scoring are doing nothing to stop the advance of the alien flyers. After breaking through both the screen of shrapnel created by the explosions and the barrage of laser fire, the CC began to swarm the fleets of ships that had dared to confront them. The cheering from earlier feels like a dream now. The comms are packed with nothing but screams and pain shouts. The UEF army is tumbling down a sharp incline toward ruin. If we assume that the same thing that happened to Mars is taken... What happened on Mars is taking place here. The aliens must be tearing apart the vessel's hulls and abducting the crew to the mothership, dead or alive. Let's go! We have to save everyone! Wait, we don't have orders to engage yet. HQ should play its trump card soon. They have no choice. But Commander, you mean we're not their trump card? You mean they'll use the special now? But with the enemy's mobility being what it is, they'll be able to escape the blast zone easily. Holding her breath, Conway looks up at the Commander's face. No, that can't be part of the operation. Quite the opposite. HQ probably didn't predict we'd be cornered this badly. Though, still, orders are orders. A shadow falls over my heart. Each squadron's HQ received a classified order in case something like this happened. We have our orders. They will see them through. The operation map starts to twinkle with small flashes. The order is that if the enemy overwhelms the ship, they are at a liberty to make efficient use of the special, guaranteeing that it hits the enemy to deal a blow to their tanks. Those flashes are the final acts of each spaceship. They are self-destructing. Wow, look at it. It's like fireworks. I guess that's what nukes look like in space, huh? Given how much faster the CC are, it seems unlikely that any of the spaceships will escape. Their crews are basically doomed to be abducted, but still telling them to self-destruct. No, that wasn't how the order went. All the order said was to simply make effective use of the weapon. What's the enemy's estimated casualty rate? The HQ staff's officers implied the enemy had lost maybe a tenth of their forces. That few, and after we used our trump card too. Effective commanders must be murderous machines that know how to most effectively spend their allies' lives. That's not what this is. This is the height of blind folly. The fantasy of self-purported geniuses who know nothing of the reality of the front lines. The fate of the ambush fleets, which are made up of older vessels, is a tragic one. With their ordnance suspended, all they have are outdated, lesser weapons. Their firepower is incapable of damaging the enemy. Their hulls are torn apart and their crews abducted and killed only until silence remains. Some of the ships manage to detonate their reactor warheads and self-destruct, taking down some of the enemy flyers. But the enemy is so tough that unless the blast hit them at point-blank range, even that is not enough to kill them. This isn't a battle. It's a one-sided massacre. A few of the older ships try to plunge deeper into the heart of the enemy lines, trying to act as a diversion for the main fleet. But sadly, even the main fleet lacks the firepower to capitalize on these momentary distractions. Even the newest ships can't keep up with the enemy's mobility. They damage some of the flyers by hitting them point-blank with their more powerful lasers. But for every alien main, many more ships are torn apart. The graph showing the casualties from our side continues its upward climb. By now, all the older ships are wiped out. 80% of the main fleet is gone too. The UEF army is being utterly annihilated. Why won't they give us the order? We're the trump card. You've got your ace right here. It's us. To think, a dropout like you is our trump card. Earth really is done for. Despite her dark words, Conway has a smile on her face. I can hear an operator inform Commander Kinnison about an incoming transmission from UEF headquarters. Yeah. Finally, I thought it'd take more for them to get over their pride. The operator reads out the orders from HQ. One second, folks. The Special Warfare Troop Patrol Unit is ordered to cover the UEF military's main force and assist in the evacuation of the moon's civilian population. Come on! At times like these, the HQ should come all frustrated and beg for help. Come on, Commander Kinnison, we admit that our weapons were useless to stop the enemy, but you and your men can win this, right? And then you push up your glasses, Commander, and say, this is what we have the magical girls for. Commander Kinnison ignores Lizette's words without so much as blinking. Instead, he says to the operator, how long until the CC's vanguard reaches the moon? The operator replies that it'll take 4 hours. Calculate how long it'll take to evacuate all the moon citizens. Commander Kinnison looks over at each one of us and says, First Lieutenant Lizette Agarel, First Lieutenant Cersei Bernhard, and First Lieutenant Lee Conway, Special Warfare Trooper is hereby... The Special Warfare Trooper should be a unit, is hereby ordered to deploy. Cover the moon's citizens as they evacuate. I pray that you do all you can. Conway and I salute, but Lizette responds by pumping her fist with excitement. Yahoo! Hell yeah! It's finally time for the secret unit to make its grand debut! I leap out of the airlock and into outer space. The sudden shift from artificial gravity produced by centrifugal force to zero gravity makes my head spin, but I soon recover. The blue ball called Earth is directly beneath us. As cliched as it might seem to call it that, its azure hue truly is undeniable. Above us is the dark abyss of space. The sensation of space against my skin feels warmer than it did back in the space sector around Mars. I still haven't gotten used to perceiving the cosmos directly through all five of my senses. It's such a strange feeling. We've already fought the aliens several times already, but this is our first time fighting as an official unit. On top of that, the lives of so many people rest on our slender shoulders. It's not just the lives of everyone on the moon, but the future of everyone back on Earth as well. I can't fight back the combination of elation and fear creeping through me. Can I really shoulder such a heavy burden? Let's go! From the looks of it, Lizette only feels excitement about all this. I wish I could feel that way too. It's fine. Even if things don't work out, it won't be your fault. Conway comes over to my side, whispering that to me. This isn't a burden we should be bearing to begin with, but sometimes life doesn't care how we feel. We can only hope to do as much as we can in our own limited capacity. Though you could also say that if anyone expects us to do more than that, we'd all be in quite a lot of trouble. I nod, but I can't say that I feel relieved at all. After all, she's fighting for her homeland's people. She must be feeling an even heavier, more crushing sense of responsibility than I am. Yet she still found it in herself to share those words with me. It makes me happy. We fly through space faster and more gracefully than any spaceship. We blitz by the civilian and military ships headed for the moon, accelerating the entire way. The distance between the Earth and the moon doesn't even seem real to me. Yes, light can cross it in a second, but in the past when the Apollo 11 first landed on the moon, its journey took 4 days. Nowadays, the fastest spaceships can make the trip in a day. A civilian vessel needs 2. We finish our journey in less than 3 hours. If Lizette wasn't slowing down to let us keep up with her, she could have arrived even sooner. The space sector above the moon is in a state of chaos. Civilian ships carrying evacuating citizens, military crafts, media crews covering the evacuation, ships everywhere. Special warfare troopers. Remaining time until the entirety of the moon's civilians are evacuated is roughly 31 hours. We receive a transmission from Commander Kennison. If you destroy the aliens' advance force, it should buy us a day until the massive alien arrives. I expect you to put up a good fight, but maybe that's the kind of platitude you might expect me to say now, so I won't tell you to do that. I already know that you are capable. We finish passing by the moon, rapidly approaching the battlefield where the aliens are massacring the UEF's forces. Some ships self-destruct their reactor warheads. Others are torn apart by the CC before they can, while still others are punched full of gigantic holes. Crewmen suffocate to death as their spacesuits are torn from their bodies. Yahoo, let's do it! Lizette's body glows with white light as she manifests a gigantic sword. The sword grows bigger and bigger until it's so large that its width is longer than Lizette itself. Lizette, prioritize the ones that are further from the ships. Your weapon is too powerful. You might cut through the ships. Oh, take this and that and one more. As always, Lizette doesn't seem to be listening, but somehow, or maybe also in typical Lizette fashion, the massive sword sweeps through the CC swarm without even so much as scratching a single UEF ship. Wow. Conway manifests her six teddy bears around herself. I suppose I should know better than pay attention to that idiot servant. Cersei, I'll stay here with the little ones and cover the soldiers' retreat. You go with Lizette. I nod, manifest the spear of light in my hand, and rip and fly off. With swings of my spear, I widen the safe space Lizette initially cleaved open. Cersei's six teddy bears fire laser beams and shoot down any enemies that try to sneak up behind us. Aha! Die, alien scum! Die, alien scum, die! You're all weak, you weaklings! Don't underestimate humanity! Do you see now, huh? Do ya? Lizette cuts through every CC she comes across, one after another. She utterly overwhelms them. No other word can describe it. Meanwhile, I sweep up any enemies that slip by or that she leaves crippled. The swarm of CC flyers visibly changes tactics. It seems they're shifting their focus from the UEF fleet to us. Acknowledging us as the bigger threat, they peel away from the ships and rush towards us. Lizette laughs loudly. Come at me! Come on! Give me your best shot! Enemies in every direction! Save me the trouble of coming to you! Huh? Ha 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 ha! With rapid spins of her blade of light, she mows down the CC swarming around her. Somehow her sword looks like it's grown even larger and bigger than before. She's amazing. Her lines might sound more fitting of a villain than a hero, but either way, she's still amazing. Oh no, Lizette's too cool. Still, as cool as she is, I can't afford to spend all my time gawking at her. The ugly CC are trying to swarm me too. Utilizing my spear's long reach, I cut down several of them with a single slash. Conway's covering fire is precise. Whenever there's more enemies than I can handle, she either forces them back or outright eliminates them. The UEF spaceships take advantage of our distraction to escape. They're all state-of-the-art ships, meaning they're probably remnants from the Central Fleet. But they're all heavily damaged and some of them are obviously internally crippled. Looks like we've got things out of control, one way or another. Apparently, there aren't any CC left behind us as Conway flies over to my side. Despite how far Lizette is, I can clearly hear her laughing maniacally. Ha ha, if you don't run, I'll kill you. I'll kill you even if you do run, though. As Lizette cackles, I can hear the howling of the CC flyers as they're cut into pieces. The two of us look at each other for a second. She never changes, does she? That's my Lizette for you. We're interrupted by a military vessel approaching us. It's missing half its thrusters and its entire weapons module. I recognize it as one of the newer Orion-class cruisers. I believe that's the last ship. We watch it pass us by when... Wait, something's wrong. I don't sense any people on it. Just as Conway raises her voice in alarm, CC flyers that have been clinging to the far side of the ship leap away and rush straight for us. They're nearly right on top of us, hoping that we fail to react in time. But one of Conway's teddy bears pops into existence between us and the advancing CC. It fires a single red laser beam before its entire body explodes. The wave of CC scatters to avoid the blast, giving us the time we need. One enemy hurtles straight through the shockwave, but I cut it down with ease. Another one explodes as Conway's other five teddy bears burn it down with concentrated fire. With the element of surprise lost, the remaining CC pose no real threat to us any longer. The two of us mop the rest up in mere seconds after that. Soon enough, the CC's attacks abate. Lizette says, that was anticlimactic. With that disappointed remark, she turns around and begins returning to base. That's how we conclude our first official recorded battle. I take a shower and return to my room. There I find Lizette lying on the floor, her limbs spread wide. She's completely naked with her privates in plain view. I can't help but tell her to put some clothes on. After all, we might be called to action at any moment. She lazily turns her eyes in my direction. I mean, I'm always so tired after I transform. Come on, give me a break. I work so hard. She's not wrong. I don't really feel it while we're fighting and flying around, but as soon as everything's over and we go back to normal, I get really tired and hungry. My skin feels sticky with sweat. It feels awful. When we told Commander Kinnison about it when we first met, he gave us permission to shower when we changed back. And as soon as I undid the transformation and washed myself off, I felt so drained I could hardly stay on my feet. I wonder if all the magical girls transforming heroes from all those shows Lizette always forces me to watch will they also get this tired after they transform. Do they get a craving for an ice-cold beer, too? I heave a sigh and sit on my bed. Lizette crawls over to my feet and starts rubbing her head into my lap. It says, Cersei, comfort your tired hero, would you? Let me squeeze your boobies. Let me use them as a pillow. I give the bathroom door a significant look. Moments later, Conway comes out of it. Our gazes meet. I'm sorry, this is a room for three, ladies. Seriously? Oh, do you want to join in? That remark makes me jolt. Conway is smart and talented, and for all her sarcastic complaining, she does get along with Lizette. What if Lizette likes her better than me? I must politely refuse. I'll just put on my clothes and make myself scarce, so don't worry about it. She hurriedly puts her clothes on before turning to me. I'm sure you have it quite rough. Still, I think you can have a little more faith in this feral child you've tamed, yes? With that remark, she leaves the room. I know. For all her complaints, Conway respects our relationship and does her best to be considerate to all of us, rather. But she can be so clever, it's scary. I realize I might come across as callous for thinking that way, but she scares me. Who's this feral child? I wrap my arms so tightly around Lizette's head. It's fine if she doesn't understand. For the next operation, the Special Warfare Trooper unit will deploy from the very beginning. Oh, alright! So the top brass finally acknowledges our power. It's clear that they're treating us differently now. For the last mission, we were stationed on Base 32, a small base moving along the Earth's orbit. But now they've lost so many ships and personnel, we've been assigned to the far larger Atlantic base, which is now vacant of its usual garrison. Military base is located between Earth and the Moon. Its facilities are much better equipped, though life here is far more comfortable. Of course, our personal quarters and the base's command center are built from the same modular design, so those spaces are pretty much the same on Base 32. I assume they've realized covering things up is useless at this point. Exactly. There's no point trying to conceal the casualties from the previous operation. After all, they were so confident they'd win that they had media ships right there, right at the scene of battle. Multiple media outlets have covered your heroics. In fact, at this point, your actions are the only thing the reporters are talking about. Oh, let's go! We're now officially recognized heroes of the Earth! It's a shame we can't stay a secret unit, though. You mentioned operation, but does the UEF military even have enough troops left to carry one out? The survivors from the fleets are being reorganized into the first task force together with you three. Our unit can make short work of the small enemy flyers, but I don't think we're capable of fighting Raiden's eye. Based on your achievements during the last operation, the top brass thinks you can. They think we're capable of destroying that thing? No matter how you look at it, we're going to lose big time. I'll explain the operation's outline then. The reorganized UEF military will be defending New Beijing and New Washington with everything they have. I can feel the presence of the CC swarm quickly approaching us. The swarm shines brightly against the black backdrop of space, reminding me of a large school of migrating fish. The ship that dropped us off has already retreated. At this point, it's only us versus them in the space sector. You know, I always thought heroes could, like, do whatever they want. I figured we'd have more freedom, I guess. That wouldn't be possible to begin with. There are too many groups involved with us by now. What a drag! The moon's surface is far below us. The two stains splashed across it are New Beijing and New Washington. The visible parts that are on the surface are just heat exchangers and various communications arrays. The majority of the cities themselves is underground. The citizens have already finished evacuating. The only people left down there are a ground unit waiting to play their role in the attack to come. Cruising between us and the moon's surface is UEF's first task force. Hey, when this is over, we could quit the army and start a private security company. And behind the scenes, we could be a secret unit fighting for justice. I'll be the captain who's always just lazing around, but always comes through when it counts. Cersei can be my big boob series secretary. And then the captain and the secretary always bum out together, even during work. Your secretary? That doesn't sound so bad. Actually, nothing about it seems bad at all. So long as I get to stay with Lizette, anything's fine with me. But for some reason, I think I'll probably end up working part-time jobs behind the scenes to make ends meet. And we'll get Missy to do all the dirty work for us, like looking into cheating spouses and looking for lost pets. That doesn't sound like a security company's job. Don't you mean a private investigator firm, maybe? That could also work. Though with Conway around, I can't see us ever having problems with money. It can be anything, so long as it's fun. Actually, why don't we just work as jacks of all trades? How about it, you two? Sound good? And who's gonna work while I'm away? That'll be fine. I'll just put up a sign on the door that says we're on break. Doesn't that mean you two would be mooching off my hard work? Of course not. That'd be too much. I'll be secretary, so I'll keep all the information organized. Yeah, that's what it'll mean. I'll give you the biggest salary, though. I can't imagine us even making any money to begin with, so telling me now that I'll get paid the most isn't saying much. Boo, you tightwad. The enemy's presence doesn't seem to be getting any closer. They're not showing any signs of attacking the Earth. By now, the other two have noticed as well. They're ignoring us. Disrespectful. I'll charge them. It seems we should show these guests to their rooms, no? Conway manifests her six teddy bears around herself. Each one fires out a laser from its eyes, nose, mouth at the end of each limb. 8 lasers per bear for a total barrage of 48 laser beams. Though the volley is impressive, each individual laser is relatively weak. You're joking, right? You're not going to hit them from here. Even if she does, those beams won't do too much. The sizzle of infrared rays make it clear that the lasers have hit their target, but they won't be able to penetrate the barriers of the CC flyers. Of course, Conway must know this too. Is she trying to provoke them then? She fires more lasers, but each time she shoots, she does it with fewer rays. 42, 36, 30, 24, 18, 12. Is she exhausting herself? But suddenly, one corner of the CC formation bursts into flames. Enemy down! Oh wow, hey, how did you do that? I imitated an old method from the era of dreadnoughts. I learned about it back at the officers' academy. As she explains it, she fires another barrage. Once again, the number of rays gradually decreases before finally piercing through the enemy. Ah, so she's walking her shots onto her target. Long ago, the seas of Earth were ruled by naval battleships. These ships had huge guns that could fire great distances. However, without radar, accurately hitting moving targets from extreme range is very difficult. Precisely calculating the target's relative trajectory and compensating for any maneuvers it might make while simultaneously factoring in the weather was nightmarishly complex. Instead, they would fire a barrage of shells in a set pattern and track where each landed relative to the target. By continually adjusting their predictions and refining their understanding of the target's movement, they gradually tightened their barrage until they scored a hit. It seems Conway is applying the same tactics to her laser barrages. First, she roughly estimates the enemy position and fires a spray of low-power lasers. These can't penetrate the alien's barriers, but she can figure out which one score hits by searching for the resulting infrared rays. Based on which lasers hit the previous volley, she narrows the spread while increasing each shot's power. Eventually, she pierces the enemy's barriers entirely, shooting the aliens down. Did they ever mention that? Well, who cares? Either way, they're coming for us now. The CC formation begins to turn our way. Maybe the aliens have some kind of preference for the number 5 because they always come in groups of that size. That is interesting. The enemy drawing closer makes Conway's lasers that much more accurate. The CC are already taking considerable losses from weathering the one-sided barrage. Hey, leave some for me. Don't worry about that. It seems there's more of them this time around. 5 groups of 5 manage to survive Conway's persistent fire. They close in on us at rapid speed. She shoots down 11 of them, but 14 still remain before they're upon us. Here they come. They're really coming this time. Let's go! Lizette springs forward, and I follow suit. Oh, massive evil slaying passion sword! Lizette's body shines with a blinding white light. As the aura around her morphs into the shape of a sword, she dives into the enemy ranks. I manifest my long lance, into my hands, thrusting it forward as well. Ha 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 ha! You're all weak. You're all wusses, you hear? Feel the iron fist of justice, a ball of flames that burns hot red. She spins the white blade like a whirlwind, mowing down, slashing through, and tearing apart the enemy. She amazes me every time I look at her. Whichever one's attempt to avoid her attacks meet the end at the tip of my spear. Those that get past me are promptly shot down by Conway's lasers. Doesn't take long for us to wipe the enemy out. At this rate, I think we can defeat all of them except for that really big one. If only it were that simple. I follow Conway's gaze. The rest of the enemy group that ignored us up until now is spreading out as they approach us. Here they come! Conway's shots become stronger and more accurate the closer the enemy come. She shoots the aliens down, one after another, in large numbers. We should stick to the operation and retreat as we fight. I just hope Lizette's gonna stick to the plan and actually retreat. Wherever I look, all I see are more CC. Space billows around us. I can feel it shaking across my skin. Lizette swings herself around like the very sword she wields, spinning like a tornado as she charges straight toward the oncoming enemy. She certainly doesn't look like she's planning to retreat. Conway doesn't look concerned at all, but I think that's because she doesn't know Lizette as well as I do. I have to keep my wits about me. If Lizette goes wild, I'm the only one that could rarely pull her back. That's my responsibility here. Slowly but steadily, the battleground shifts closer to the moon. Oh, take that! Don't underestimate humanity! Lizette thrusts deep into the enemy force. I cut down enemies she overlooks, and Conway shoots down anything that passes me. Conway's attack range is extremely wide, allowing her to cover us from the rear as we continue to assault the enemy head-on. But there's too many of them. Inevitably, some of them, though not many, slip past us three. Each time they do, Lizette simply goes, "Hey, don't run away from me, you wimps! God, I hate escort missions!" She turns abruptly and takes off after the fleeting aliens, cutting them down while shouting all the while. She's entirely keen on not letting a single one escape her. Watching her chase after the enemy yet again, I mutter to myself, "Why? She's still following the plan!" It turns out that I don't actually have to stop her. It's because she's got a burden holding her back. A burden? I understand what Conway means by that. The burden is us. We're supposed to be protecting the rear, but despite our efforts, some of the aliens are slipping past us. Someone has to pursue them and finish them off. Between the two of us, Conway has more kills by far. I'm nothing but a burden for Lizette. I just drag her down. Conway looks over my shoulder. I'm talking about that. That is the UEF's first task force. If any CC get past our perimeter, those weaklings who were the UEF's finest unit until yesterday would get torn apart by the aliens' attacks. Oh, that's what you meant. The earlier battle proved that they were powerless against the CC. Given that Lizette insists on being a hero who protects the weak, they're no different from civilians she's responsible for watching over. At first, I thought they were deploying that useless unit here to preserve the UEF's dignity. But from the looks of it, they're only here to limit Lizette and keep her in check. He pretended to let them participate just so we can save them. In fact, they're basically positioned perfectly for just that purpose. I swear, our commander is one cunning man, Commander Kinnison. If it wasn't for him, we'd only be seen as women who had something strange implanted into their bodies by the aliens. We'd have been in quarantine, or worse, experimented on like guinea pigs. The only reason we're not being put under the knife and instead being allowed to fight is thanks to him. I'm extremely grateful for everything he's done, but he may be a scarier man than I realize. The enemy's presence is retreating. It does feel like the enemy's attacks are dying down, but... Oh, hold on a second, guys. It does feel like the enemy's attacks are dying down, but... Right, that must mean... That thing must be coming. Lizette flies back to us. It's coming, that thing is coming! We can all sense it. The gigantic enemy, Raiden's Eye, the enemy that raped us and gave us this power, its trajectory turns towards us. That exactly as our operation plan predicted. Several hours ago, during our briefing. I'll explain the operation's outline then. The reorganized UEF military would be defending New Beijing and New Washington with everything they have. Lizette and Conway's expressions filled with disappointment. Then I think we should focus on offense rather than defense. If pushing them back doesn't work, we just have to push harder. I don't think attacking them would do us any good, but remaining on the offensive certainly won't help us either. I could understand their disappointment. This isn't a defensive plan. It's an offensive plan meant to make effective use of our reactor warheads despite their slow speed and small effective radius. At Mars, the enemy destroyed all the facilities orbiting the planet before descending to the planet's surface. There, they ransacked all the bases, slaughtering and abducting all the personnel. They will likely attempt to do the same to the moon. However, if you can put up enough resistance, the enemy flyers would be incapable of completing those objectives. In that situation, the most powerful unit they have, Raiden's Eye, will be forced to personally arrive in order to deal with you. Lizette's eyes practically lit up. And then we could beat it, right? No, as powerful as you are, we're not expecting that much out of you. Indeed, I didn't think our power would be effective against something that massive. Still, I couldn't help but think that we'd somehow figure out some way to deal with it all the same. If everything goes the way HQ hopes it will, the two cities on the moon will function as poison bait, and once they bite, they'll get on one spicy surprise. Exactly. Once all the citizens have been evacuated, we'll bring large numbers of reactor warheads into the cities. You three just need to keep the fight going right until the very last moment, then make your retreat. Once you do, the enemy will go for the cities. Are they going to shoot them into that eye-like part? Based on our current data, our unwelcome guest isn't as quick or mobile as the flyers. Exactly. If we fire the reactor warheads from close range, it shouldn't be able to avoid them. They're propelled by rockets, albeit very simple ones. From the previous battles, we know that the blasts of reactor warheads are able to damage the alien flyers. The world governments are gathering up all the reactor warheads they've hoarded and are sending them all to the moon right now. Footage of a constant stream of ships arriving at and departing from the moon's Armstrong spaceport, its central harbor, plays on the holographic display. They were bringing nuclear warheads on their trip to the moon and evacuating refugees on their way back. Still, I'm assuming they're preparing for what comes after this war because what they're delivering is much less than what we know they have. At any rate, this is by far the biggest stockpile of firepower in one place ever since the dawn of human history. What? are the units that will be launching the reactor warheads unmanned. Small number of inspection personnel remain there until the last minute. It's a do-or-die mission, but we've had many volunteers. Morale is on the rise. That last battle is effective at getting everyone's spirits up. If nothing else, it proves that the enemy can be destroyed. And it's all thanks to our hard work. Just like with Yuzuko. The press must be dying to interview us. But I really like being a secret unit. I can't decide which is better. The media's been having a field day with your heroics. Your identities are still confidential, though. Earth knows about you, but the rest is all still secret. Oh, so we're celebrities, but our identities are kept under wraps. We get to play both ways. This is great! She's a little fool, isn't she? Personally, I thought this optimism that lets her see the best in any situation was one of her best qualities. Raiden's eye approaches menacingly, as if looming over the two cities. The enemy hovers some 18 miles above the moon's surface. We've been performing a fighting retreat over the course of four whole hours, luring the enemy to this specific spot. The blue light spilling from its eye tier shines down on New Beijing and New Washington. Standing our ground in that silver sliver of space between the enemy and the cities, we continue fighting the CC flyers. We've kept the CC from reaching the cities, preventing them from discovering that they're abandoned save for the volunteer units. Oh. I'll protect the Earth! Ah! Lizette flies freely through the air, much like her gigantic sword that cuts down the enemies one by one. Lizette, once the enemy's 12 miles away, you have to retreat! Any flyers that get past Lizette are either shot down by Ken Wade or six teddy bears' lasers or slashed apart by my spear. The UEF unit consisting of few ships they were able to cobble together has already retreated. At this point, it's just us and the personnel hiding in the nearby cities. But man, that big enemy's even stronger than the White Comet Empire. I tried cutting up its surface a few times with my sword, but it just regenerates. It's not fair. What? Lizette, that's crazy. You did that despite our orders? Whenever did she descend down to the surface of Raiden's eye and come back? I mean, I thought I could cut through it. If that were enough to do it in, we wouldn't need this absurd operation now, would we? A transmission rings in my ears. The launch units down in the cities are finally ready to fire the reactor warheads. That means we have to start falling back. Raiden's eye is too large to get away quickly. At this range, it won't have the time to retreat. We begin to withdraw from the battlefield. We need to fall back. Wait, it looks like some of our allies didn't make it out. Raiden's eye is so much mass that it's influencing gravity around the moon. Some of the designated escape routes along the moon's surface must have collapsed. I'll go save them. Very well, but we're short on time, so we have to finish this quickly. We hurry over to our ally's position. As we fly above the moon's surface, we can see that some of the tube tunnels connecting to the city's spaceport have been destroyed. Several people in spacesuits are crawling out of a crashed vehicle. The moment they spot us, they wave and raise their hands and cheers. Wow, we're celebrities. Think they'll ask for our autographs? Yeah, sure. Good for you, Miss Celebrity. You can gloat after we're done with this, so. After all, if we're a secret unit, we can't give away our autographs. Being a secret unit sure is tough. We touch down and usher them back into their vehicle. Once they're all secured inside, the three of us deploy a force field. A force field, that's a colloquial term for the field that surrounds us when we transform. It includes our magical girl outfits, our weapons, and the berries we produce. It's a little hard to explain, but we expand our force field so they envelop the vehicle. Once we lift the vehicle up into the air, we begin carrying it with us to the spaceport. An overbearing coercive pressure washes over me, making me look up. Raiden's eye glowers down at us, seeming so close that it seems like all it would take to touch it is to extend my hand. Blue light spills from its gaping eye-like tear, casting a paze azure glow over us all. I realize now that the blue surface looks as though it's dripping, almost like the eye is weeping. But the undulating substance isn't tears, it's tentacles. Gigantic pale blue tendrils reach down towards us. Oh crap, we gotta hurry up. We can't go any faster than this. Our only choice is to dive lower. The swarm of tentacles grows even larger. It rapidly fills the skies as the tips come ever closer. We slowly lower our altitude and attempt to escape the tentacles. It seems that our presence has been noticed at this point. It looks as though a bluish whirlwind is raging all around us. I finally come to a realization. Of the three of us, I'm contributing the least toward towing the vehicle. If Lizette or Conway were to leave, the vehicle would plummet to the ground. But it wouldn't if I did. I'm accomplishing the least here. It'd be better for me to make use of myself in a different way. I'll draw the tentacles away. You two, get them to the spaceport. Cool decision, Cersei. but I should be the one to do that. No, we can't leave you alone, Cersei. I release the grip of my force field. You two handle the rest. When I pull away, the vehicle lurches once as Conway and Lysette adjust their grip. A moment later, they recover and resume flying away. Just hang on until I come back. That's right, we're a team, but before even that, we're friends. I manifest my weapon back into existence and launch an attack on one of the massive tentacles pursuing the vehicle. The moment my weapon hits home, there's a powerful shockwave that sends me flying back. Blue liquid gushes from the tentacle where I struck it. At the very least, I can damage it. That small discovery gives me courage. I slash three more times at the tentacle closing in on the vehicle. It's too thick for me to cut through it, but I'm clearly hurting it. The bluish blood pouring from its wounds freezes in the blink of an eye, forming an azure blizzard that covers the moon's surface. Some part of me can't help but think that the sight is beautiful. Maybe that errant, though, is what doomed me, or maybe I'm simply too weak. By the time I notice the second presence nearing me, the other massive tentacles already swooped in on me from my flank. There's no time to dodge it. It slams into me, sending me through, flying through the air. My thoughts fade to black. Uh-oh! Sheer agony. That's what makes me jolt back to consciousness. The pain tearing through my body pounds and pulsates through me, starting where my thighs join my hips. Crunching sounds and tearing pain shoot through my body. I can feel hot fluid spilling out of me. Ooh, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to continue this. I'm starting to get a little hoarse, guys. I'm being broken and crushed away. I'm scared. It hurts so much. Help me. A wet, glistening tentacle as thick as my thigh dangles from where it is piercing into my crotch. It ceaselessly pulses and shakes. How am I not dead yet with something this large thrusting into my body? I wish I were. Another one, just as large, pushes into my ass. Stop it, I'm breaking apart. Yet again, it feels like something else inside me is being torn apart. Lysette, I can never see you again. It hurts so much. I'm falling apart. I'm going to die. I know it. But the fact means I'll never see you again. It hurts so much more. The tentacles force my limbs apart. As they penetrate my orifices, my body jerks and spasms as if I made a dance at some fae ritual. Another strange sensation jolts through me. Something is penetrating my nipples. When I look down at my breasts, I'm greeted by the sight of slender tentacles sharpened into needles thrusting through the tips of my nipples. My nipples swell up from the inside. I can see the tangled shape of the tentacles writhing within my breast. The cold sensation within my breast begins to spread to the rest of me. I'm overcome by intense nausea. Ah, so this is how my life comes to an end, to think that I dreamed of saving Lysette on my own back then. Tentacles plunge into my body, stirring up my insides as if they're simply tenderizing a piece of meat. My insides rot and turn to mush, yet the tentacles never once slow their efforts. The nausea becomes too much to bear. I soon begin vomiting non-stop. The taste of my blood fills my mouth. I don't even know what organs of mine are breaking at this point. Honestly, it no longer matters. How in the world am I still alive? I should have suffocated by now. After all my screaming, surely my lungs must be empty. My magical girl outfit is no longer recognizable after being savaged and melted away by the tentacles. My military uniform underneath is torn to shreds. Nothing remains to protect my body. The tentacles have climbed all the way up to my mouth. The utter violation of my body makes me want to vomit, but I can't. The way it bulges my throat from the inside threatens to smother me. Soon I'll never see Lysette again. She'll never call my name again. I'll die alone. At the same time, I feel a tinge of relief. This will kill me. I'll die. I'll be dead soon. I'll be free of this pain, this feeling of rotting from the inside out. And yet the agony continues. I don't fade away. Why? Why am I not fading away? My body faintly glows with light. Oh, it's our power, the power that lets us transform into magical girls. That's what's keeping me alive. Enough, 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 enough. Let me end already. I just want this to end. Let it end as soon as possible, right now. As I writhe in pain and agony, defy all description, that soul wish fills my thoughts. And now it feels like my fingertips are touching ice. My extremities have lost all sensation. It's like cold powdered glass is running through my nerves. I can feel nothing else. The sensation spreads rapidly, climbing through my core from my fingers and toes. My body is growing numb. The pain and agony are disappearing. Truly feels as though my body itself is crumbling away. Nothing remains in its place once the numbness overtakes it, just a void. It's not a void that's growing inside of me. I, myself, am turning into nothingness. My wish is coming true, but the realization that I'm truly disappearing fills what remains of me with nothing but terror. No, 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 I don't want to disappear.
Hold on, folks. I'll get through this scene real quick. Oh. Okay.
No, 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 I don't want to disappear. The sensation is not stopped, just my limbs. My right genitals, my rectum, my breasts, it's all disappearing. I'm fading into nothing. I'm fading into a cold darkness where I can't feel anything. No, no, I don't want this. Not this, I don't want this. But I have no way of resisting. I'm fading away, fading away, fading away. My arms, my legs, my stomach, my head, all of me fading away. I can still see. I see a woman's naked body being terribly and horrifyingly brutalized. I can no longer realize that this body is my own. Ah, it's all over. Something thrusts into my head. A cold hand bent on wiping me out of existence. The chill flows into every groove and fold of my brain. I'm fading away. Fading away. What is that? Cersei! She appears within the light. Cersei, I'll save you. A person enveloped in sacred white light. A light shaped like a sword. Hang on, Cersei. I'll be right there. That's right. It's Lizette, the person I hold dearer than anyone. The one I never want to be torn away from. I'm here, Sis Bernard. That's right. I'm Cersei. My name flares up within my withered existence like a flame rushing through my body. The tubes penetrating my body are severed at their roots. My limbs feel light all of a sudden. Lizette, I feel something leave my body. Although I feel light, I can't muster enough strength to move. Immediately after, something tightly embraces me. It's right, it's your personal hero, Lizette. Let's get out of here. Lizette flies off with me in her arms. A large mass of tentacles pursues us from all directions, trying to swat us back down to the surface. Yet somehow Lizette and I slip through the narrow, twisting path within the tangles of tentacles. It's as if time and space themselves defer to Lizette's feet. We escape the flurry of whip-like tentacles crawling in our wake. We're out! But just then, a thick trunk of tentacles thrust towards us from Lizette's blind spot. We can't get away! And on top of that, red lasers are closing in on us from ahead. Yet Lizette doesn't even try to avoid them. She continues flying straight ahead without a moment's hesitation. The lasers hit the thick tentacle just as its tip winds back to strike at us. Splotches of blue bodily fluids billow from its flesh as its wing misses us by a hair's breadth. What took you? That's my line. Who is she? Why is she so friendly with Lizette? I don't like it. Lizette's mine. Can't this woman just die? Is Cersei alright? Huh? It sounds like she knows me too. Of course she is. Who do you take me for, Missy? Missy. I remember Lizette calling someone that way. Yes, I remember. This is Conway. Our friend. Yes, you're a hero. I know. We don't have time. Hurry! Regret runs through me. I can't believe I harbored such dark feelings about Conway. I even wish for her death. With me still in her arms, Lizette blitzes past Conway and flies off. Looking behind her, I see Conway flaring more and more red lasers to fend off the pursuing tentacles while she falls back with us. That's when it happens. A massive boulder hurtles past us. Launched from the moon's surface, something else impacts Raiden's eye directly from behind. They use the mass driver catapults. I see, that's a brilliant idea. Mass driver catapults are used to propel resources from the moon into Earth's orbit. The titanium, aluminum, and iron collected from the moon's automated mines is loaded into unmanned pallets, which are then launched from each mine via railgun. Accelerated by a force in excess of 10 Gs, the cargo breaks free of the moon's gravity and flies through space at 1.24 miles per second until it's caught by a net in Earth's orbit. Each of the 15 mines dotting the moon's surface delivers hundreds of tons of resources to the orbital bases and factories around the Earth. These resources are crucial for development within space. By changing the firing angles ever so slightly, they can instead fire payloads into Raiden's eye. These crude but massive projectiles are causing more damage than any laser or ordnance can. But if we have something that good up our sleeve, why are we firing such small things at it? We should be throwing something even bigger. Building something like that makes no financial sense. Besides, even if we wanted to make something like what you're describing, we can't. Earth's laws forbid it. Raiden's eye stops pursuing us and instead turning its blue gaze toward the moon's surface. Just as the enemy looks down, red flashes and smoke begin to rise up from the two cities, which are crumbling under the gravitational pull of the gigantic enemy's mass. The reactor warheads gathered by mankind's powers are launched from close range directly into the enemy's eye. At this distance, there's no way I could possibly avoid them. Sound doesn't travel through vacuum, but I'm sure that the blast would otherwise be deafening. Flashing specks of the reaction warhead's explosion sprout from the surface of the downturned eye. Raiden's eye, massive form, shakes ever so slightly, crashes into the moon's surface, sinking into the lunar soil. They did it! The operation was a complete success. Mankind has won. I think so, anyway. For some reason, I can't feel any excitement. The enemy is still active? Correct. The operation was successful, but Raiden's eye is still active. The monitor is filled with camera feeds of the enemy's gigantic form. At first, it looks like it's completely still, then... You're right, it's still moving. Yes, it's hardly visible from this distance, but it seems to be trying to push itself away from the moon. A magnified view of the enemy makes the situation clearer. With the two cities crushed beneath its weight, Raiden's eye is now attempting to lift itself out of the massive crater its fall created. I can't believe we couldn't even damage it with such excessive firepower. Not bad. That's what I'd expect from the giant enemy that challenged me. It certainly hasn't escaped unscathed. We temporarily forced it into an inert state, but the fact it can still move after all that means it might as well be invincible. The UEF has no more cards to play. If Raiden's eye was to descend upon the Earth, it would be a catastrophe. It would bring about a massacre dwarfing what it did to Mars and the Moon. But oddly enough, the realization doesn't stir any emotion in me. To me, that knowledge simply seems like a cold, hard fact. Yes, it'd be a terrible thing for the species of mankind to suffer, but my mind remains indifferent, so as if asking, so what? Some part of me is terrified of that indifference. By now, Raiden's eye floats completely above the moon's surface. It begins moving once more. What's the enemy's course? To answer Commander Kinnison's question, a projection of Raiden's eye predicted course is brought up to the center of HQ. Can you overlay the positions of the cities and mines on the moon's surface? Raiden's eye is moving towards one of the mines. It's trying to destroy the mass driver catapults. It'll take some time to crush all 15. That gives us some time. The little ones are desperate to live on. Wait, what is this? Why do I feel like this whole affair has nothing to do with me? But I told you it wasn't enough. Why throw pebbles at it when we can throw bigger things? When I look at Lizette, though, I simply think that she's dashing and silly and haphazard. She's the same Lizette I've always loved. Whoops. I keep telling you, we can't do that. Sure we can. We just need to try. If we give up, that's when everything really ends. So let's keep pushing. Less thinking and more action. Really, no matter what, Lizette never changes. That's what's so good about her. Well, if we actually had a spare meteor lying around, things might be different. But there's nothing that big around here. It'd be too dangerous to let that remain in orbit. Yep. Lizette points at the projection in the center of the HQ. I've got a meteor we can use. You're an utter buffoon. I'm not a buffoon, I'm a hero. Lizette's so cool. We don't have any orders from the higher-ups, and I have independent authority over your unit. Deploy. I'll assume all responsibility for anything you do. If you can't do it, no one else can. They did it. Okay. Here's where we leave off. But there's not much more. This is just a little prequel. It showed how they became the magical girls and the first battle with Raiden's eye, and a whole lot of information I wish I knew before reading the novel, the main novel. This is only supposed to be an hour and 52 minutes on VNDB, so maybe a little longer. It may last about 3, maybe 4 hours, so we probably have 2 more hours of this. And then after that, I'll go back to Dead and I guess the week after. Next week is comic week. So, we'll go ahead and we'll finish it. Then I'll do some Starless and, stuff like that. We'll probably hold off Securing Tomorrow Dreamers and we'll do that later because we are just kind of digging into this. But at any rate, this is the Grim Lord and I am out for Grimm's Hentai Corner with Deadonigus Gaiden. Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here and you know what time it is. It's Grimm's Hentai Corner and we are back with more Deadonigus Gaiden. This is the last one. After that, we'll be done with Gaiden, and we will get back with Den and Igus. Maybe next week. I'm not sure exactly, because we have a lot of other stuff that we will be working on that week. But we wanted to go ahead and do a lot of Den and Igus, because we hadn't done a lot of it in a while, and I figured we could go ahead and just do a bunch. Alright, so let's get started. When was it again? I was sick in bed with a cold with a cold in my head. When Lizette came over to play, she said we should go outside and have some fun. When my mother told her I was sick, Lizette just said, Oh, well. If you're sick, that's that. Get well soon, okay? Get better. And then she left, leaving me behind. Tired and weak, I watched her from my window as she left. Lizette looked so much more free and unfettered than she did when she was with me. It was like there were wings on her back that could carry her wherever she wanted. She went off to play with someone else, someone who wasn't me. But whoever that was, they probably had the strength needed to keep up with Lizette. Maybe she wouldn't invite me next time. That thought made me feel miserable. Lizette, I'm scared. You're too free and you might leave me behind. I'll go save the Earth real quick, okay? I'll be right back. I swear, we can't call this reckless idea of yours a real plan. Just trust me. I sent them off in the docking port, dressed not in my magical girl outfit, but a mere spacesuit. After being rescued from Raiden's eye, I found I can't transform anymore. Be careful out there. We'll be fine. I'll tear them a new one for you, Cersei. Cersei, I'll keep an eye out for girlfriends back in your place. You can rest easy about that. Conway, she's more relaxed than I am. More talented than I am. Not relaxed. Well, she's more relaxed, too. Lizette's leaving with her. No, I don't want that. No, she's being considerate of me. She knows how I feel. But even so, no, I don't want this. Okay, see you soon. Lizette beams at me. Whoa! And with that shout, she throws her body into outer space. Conway follows after her. Their figures soon disappear from sight. Yet, though I can't see them, I can still hear their voices. And just how are you gonna do that? Well, just push on it. Lizette, you really are a total idiot, but I suppose that ship's already sailed, so I'll have to see this through to the end. So yeah, I need you to buy me a little time. The two of them banter like a couple. No, I already know. They've always been like that. It's just that before, I used to be there too. And now I'm not. It's just Lizette and Conway. That fact makes me so hurt and jealous. Everyone knows what happens next. First, Conway shot down a CC patrol of flyers, drawing the attention of Raiden's eye. With that distraction, Lizette flew to the opposite side of the moon, putting it between her and Raiden's eye. She then became gigantic and moved the moon. It sounds so simple when I put it into words, but the truth is that even I'm not sure what happened there. It's classified military intel. I can't find any recorded footage of it. But while it was happening, I got to hear everything. Henshin, the giant of light! Whoosh! Later, Lizette told me her version of the story. I just figured that if I'm gonna move something that big, I'll just need to become big. And that does make sense. That's all she had to say about it. The written records I'm allowed to access claim that Lizette's body burst forth with a gigantic aura of light, manifesting a larger version of herself than she used to move the moon. There we go. I can't imagine that Lizette truly put any more thought into the act than what she told me. The moon began to move slowly at first, picking up speed little by little. Raiden's eye, which had been floating away from it in preparation to crush the mine's mass driver catapults, found its target rushing up to meet it instead. Raiden's eye tried to escape, but Lizette simply pressed on, driving the moon towards the enemy even more quickly. The impact of the moon against the enemy smashed it to bits, completely destroying it. Even after that, Lizette continued to accelerate. By that point, the moon had gained enough velocity to escape Earth's orbit. In other words, the Earth would ultimately lose the moon as its satellite. But that was something we'd only find out much later. That idiot actually pulled it off. You have to be an idiot in order to call other people idiots. Wait, I did. It's as crushed as a tomato dropped off the roof of a building. Ah, yeah. So, also, you can stop accelerating now. You're gonna send my homeland flying. Okay. I can hear them talking to each other. There's cheering all around the base. Mankind is victorious, they say. A new hero is born, they say. But I remain silent. Without Lizette by my side, nothing else matters anymore. I could have been part of that conversation. I could have it if it'd just been me out there, but I'm not with them right now. I can't bring myself to act. 3 hours later, Lizette and Conway return. The docking port is full of little ones. I mean, humans. Everyone's waiting for the two heroes, especially Lizette, to return. What few media ships that were still in space formed a fleet to record their return to the station. I'm not part of that. I'm the only one left out. Lizette is the first to come in from the airlock. Conway comes in a moment after her. The two of them look lovely standing next to each other. Conway deserves to occupy that spot by Lizette's side far more than I do. Lizette looks around frantically trying to find me, yet I still don't step forward. Conway finally catches sight of me and points me out to Lizette. Now that she sees me, Lizette smiles, yet I still can't take that step forward. Just then, I feel a tap on my shoulder. Startled, I jump up and look to see Commander Kinnison standing there. Go on, they're looking for you. You too are a proud, brave member of the Special Warfare Troopers. I can't fly anymore, and maybe I'll never fly again. Yet he still says that I'm part of them. With a nod, I try to suppress the anxiety lurking in my heart and take that step forward to join them. And that's it, folks. I know it was just a little bit more, and you're like, Grim, that's it? You could have done that last night. You have no idea how late it was, guys. I know it was like literally nothing. Like, that was maybe 5 minutes. But we're done. So, we'll see you next time with more Dead on Igus. And we'll be back to the original story, because we don't have any more of this. But, hey, it taught us a little bit. It's just a little fan disc prologue thingy. And now we'll play the game itself. At any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I am out, and I'll see you next time with more hentai games.